This is an interview with Mr. Joseph D. Barrett, who was born in 1912 and was 18 years old at the onset of the Great Depression in 1929. Mr. Barrett is a member of the San Diego Historical Society and currently works as the manager of the Maryland Retirement Hotel in San Diego. This interview is being conducted in his office in the Maryland Retirement Hotel. The interviewer is Jim Dacus, and the interview is being conducted on November 30th, 1973. Okay, Mr. Barrett, could you first tell us a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your background?
Well, I was born in Boston, Massachusetts on October 31st, 1912. I was brought up in the city of Boston for a few years until we moved out to the suburbs in 1925, buying our own home, which was quite an accomplishment in those days. I was the oldest of the family, five children, one of which died in flew in the First World War. And at the age of 16, to my recollection, actually was when, in 1928, was when the Depression really started to set in. Unfortunately, a lot of people didn't realize it. In my family, we did, because my father was an electrician. And the starting actually in 1926, the building trades business fell off rather drastically, which actually predicted the Depression, but people did not see it coming.
I see. So you were in Boston then?
Then I moved to Braintree, Massachusetts. It was a very small suburban town at the time. A lot of farmlands, big estates. In 1925.
Right. So, throughout, say, in the early 30s, would you say you were in Massachusetts then?
Oh, yes. Until 1937, when I went to Costa Rica to work.
Oh, I see. So we've got you now, and you're in Massachusetts in the early 30s.
That's right.
Okay. How would you say the onset of the Depression, the crash in 1929, let's say, first affected your life?
Well, actually, the crash itself didn't affect my life as much as what preceded that. As I said, business had started to sour before the crash, which is probably what caused the crash, along with overinvestment and people overspending in their investments, trying to get rich quick, one of the things in the 20s, a lot too many people try to get rich quick and they couldn't make it. However, as to the way we got along in the family,
I wanted to say, how would you say your family was affected?
It was affected by the fact that there was less work around for my father, an electrician, instead of getting 9 or 10 months a year, which was the average in those years, because when the cold weather set in, they had to shut jobs down. You couldn't put up a building. They didn't have the way of doing it as they do today, and where they can close in a job. Years ago, they couldn't. They just had to shut down a new building, and say between November and February and March back in the Northeast, because of the severe weather. All we did in the family was what every family did then, what every family should do now, but they don't. We just all worked together and got along. We all got an odd job here. We got whatever we could to do. And we made money somehow or another. As long as you were willing to go out and try to make it, you got it. And you made it. And we got along.
I see. So then what would you say first brought home to you, you yourself, the magnitude of what was going on?
Well, when I graduated from high school in 1931, I had to go looking for a full-time adult job.
I see.
And I found one. Working in the South Station in Boston for the Union News Company behind the counter, 4 to midnight, 6 nights a week, for $15 a week. In the fall, in September, I entered a small junior college to study business administration, which I did for 2 years. I'd like to point out and emphasize, which is what is wrong today. In those days, when you wanted further education, you found a way of earning it. I worked Florida Midnight in the South Station, as I said. I went to school Monday through Friday. I went into school early to do janitor work.
Yeah.
And did janitor work after school, crammed in some homework, and then ran down the street about 10 or 15 blocks to get to my job at 4 o'clock and worked Florida Midnight. Out of that $15 a week, I paid my room, board, and board at home $8 a week. And found a way of getting along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And doing the janitor work, I earned 50% of my tuition.
Well, then, would you say that this is a change that you observe that young people are going through, a sort of a social change?
We didn't go through any social change. This social change bit is highly overemphasized,
yeah,
and highly unnecessary, which is one of your problems today in your age group.
Right.
There was no social change. We all just got together and went to work for a living. And we didn't crab or cry, and we didn't ask for any handouts. We just went to work for a living and found a way of making a living. And anybody who didn't, it's the same as today, it's just that they don't want to make a living, they're trying to live off somebody else. In those days, we had no welfare, and if we had, we wouldn't have asked for it. We would have been too proud to ask for it.
Right. Okay, well then, did you observe at that time, say you were what, around 17, 18 years old, we're talking about now, would you say that you observe any real suffering around you?
No.
Just from people you saw?
Not a whole lot, no. As I said, everybody got along, most everybody. They had something to eat on the table. They had a roof over their head.
I see. So, okay then, when did you, so you said, as you said before, you first realized that things were going to get bad before
mm-hmm.
the market crash in 1929. Could you just go over that again?
Well, any time that your construction industry has a fall off, that presages a recession or a depression, for the simple reason that they are the biggest purchasers of steel, along with the automobile industry. And all these products that eventually are not going to be made because there's no buildings in there.
Right.
Right.
So things start first getting bad. You observe things start getting bad actually before the
big
crash.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Did you yourself remember seeing any newspaper or magazine articles about people predicting the big crash coming up in 1929? Or it just hit everybody
Actually, the one man in the country who did predict it was Al Smith when he was running for presidency of the United States in 1928. But
yeah,
Nobody listened to him either.
Okay. So there's a politician that sort of forecasted it.
That's right.
It.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't remember, say, any of your, like your parents or your any relatives or friends commenting that, God, I bet you were in for something bad or anything like that.
Oh, except that they were already feeling it. That's
yeah.
All.
But nothing, no indications of like the magnitude, the whole nation was going to be, anything like that. What would you say like the reason for that was that people were sort of in the dark as to the magnitude of what was going to happen?
Economy must rise and fall. It's the nature of economy.
Yeah.
It has to. Of course, now you have, since that time, you have the SEC, which controls the stock market in a way that that crash couldn't happen again for the same reason.
Right.
But there was no controls over the stock market in those days. People just could handle their investments whichever way they wanted with as little money as they had to put in. They could manipulate stocks and bonds in those
right.
days. You can't do it that way today.
That was something about the get-rich-quick thing you mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Was that sort of a thing that was kind of popular around that time? No,
it was popular amongst a small percentage of the people who did have a few dollars in the bank and then thought they could get rich quick.
Yeah.
But they were the exception to the rule. They were a small percentage of people. However, they did have a little more effect than the average person because of the way they hit things, I would say.
Yeah. So, from what you observed, though, that it was that small percentage that really?
When it came to the stock market.
Yeah.
Just when it came to the stock market.
Oh, right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So they were the ones who kind of really suffered a lot.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Well. Okay, you said that you said that you and your family were affected. I'd like to talk, so you could kind of elaborate about how you got by, sort of like what people did to get the food on the table.
You just went out to work. You found a job, that's all. We just found a job and we had our food on our table, we had the roof over our heads, we paid off our mortgage. We just went out to work as a unit, as a family unit, and we took care of everything as a family unit.
And you'd say that was widespread, like all the families, everyone kind of...
And in those days, yes, it was much more natural to do it that way, yes.
Yeah.
The family had more unity. The children in the family in those days had more of a sense of responsibility towards the family unit.
Yeah. That's something I've kind of come up with in my research, and I wondered if you could elaborate on that. Was that, you talked about this cohesiveness in the family, that was kind of widespread, though, then.
That was general in those days. There was hardly a family that was an exception to that.
Yeah.
The family worked together, and that's how we got along. We all contributed. And none of us said, well, what do I get back out of it as an individual? You're just thinking of the family, that's all.
Right. And your family wasn't unique in that sense?
No, heck no. No. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then we could say then that from what you experienced, most people got by just this tightness among the family and going out and sticking together.
Getting whatever job you could. Maybe it wasn't a job you liked,
yeah. Right.
But you got what you could get and you worked. Mm-hmm. You asked the boss what time he wanted you in the morning. You didn't ask him when you were going to get through. You didn't say, do you have a retirement plan or do I get a vacation? You just said, I want a job, and he told you when to come to work.
All right. Okay. So you mentioned that when you did get out of high school, that you went out and you got yourself a job.
That's right.
An adult's job. Mm-hmm. So could you talk a little bit about that job that you got?
It was a clerical job behind the counter, clerk's job, sales clerk.
Right.
And... it wasn't the job I wanted to spend my lifetime in, but it was a job.
Right.
And I worked at it for a couple of years till I finished school, and I got another job, which was a little better. And I just tried to keep improving myself as I went along, that's all.
Okay.
In 1937, when the Depression was still at its worst, I found a job to take me out of the country. In those days, to go 3,000 miles was like... going a trip around the Columbus trip.
Yeah.
But it was an advance. It was a step in the right direction for me, so I took the risk and ended up in the tropics.
Okay. So, talking about these jobs that you had, first the clerical job there and the one you went to after that and then the job in the tropics, it must have been pretty hard. How did you get the job? Was it
looking
pretty
hard
to get them? How did you go about it?
I just went asking for a job. Every chance I got, when I wanted something, I just went asking, just pounded the pavements, that's all.
Yeah.
That's all.
Hard.
I always found something.
Yeah. Okay. Did you ever have any friends? You mentioned you really looked hard, and people who went out and looked hard for jobs usually found it. Did you ever find anybody who just did look hard and couldn't find a job?
Oh, there were those who did really look and couldn't find one right away. But the percentage of those who did not look were very small. In those days, you didn't have unemployment compensation. You didn't have all these fringes you had today. Before a man had an incentive, he'd have to go to work. And he usually found something. He might find something for only a couple of days a week, but at least he got some money in.
Yeah. Okay. So, and you'd say that you actually went out and found your own job.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And that was like a common. What I'm trying to get at is I know nowadays a lot of young people get jobs like connections, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, people went out and pounded the pavement.
Usually pounding the pavement. Occasionally, somebody would have a connection, sure.
Yeah.
But normally it was just pounding the pavement until they found a job.
Okay. And what about the pay for those jobs back then? Did you find that that the pay you got was in your eyes, in your mind then, fair pay for what you were doing? The amount of effort you were putting out.
It was enough money for you to live comfortably. However, you worked longer hours for it.
Yeah, you could talk something about the pay. related to the work and the hours, as, you know, compared to nowadays, like say what's on nowadays?
Well, if you made $50 a week in the Depression, that was a kingly salary.
Yeah.
I mean, you actually lived comfortably, you had a nice home, you had a car, you were well clothed, you were well fed. That same man today, with the situation today, would have to make at least $300 a week to equal it. Because he's paying taxes that he didn't pay in those days, number one. He has deductions from pay he never had in those days. In other words, it's $50 a week, it's $50 a week, period. He got that exact amount of money.
Yeah. Okay. So, the pay in your eyes then was what, fair? Or?
I would say it was, if you... Not always fair, no. It couldn't be uniformly fair. If a man worked for a bank, insurance company, he could probably say, I get a fair salary. There were other jobs that weren't paying fair salaries.
Right.
But that was the fact.
Yeah.
And there were other people who worked a lot harder, longer, harder hours for the same amount of money as another man got for 40, 44 hours a week.
So there was a lot of inequity.
Well, there was inequity,
yeah.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay. Would you say that the pay that you were bringing home, the pay that you were making, was enough to substantially help the family?
Oh, sure.
Really? In what sense? Like, it did buy a lot of food, or did pay help really help pay that rent?
Well, you could feed a family of six or seven people in those days for $8 or $10 a week and eat well.
Really?
Oh, sure you could. Sure you could. Providing your mother made her own bread and
right.
So on.
Right.
But you ate real well on $8 or $10 a week.
Okay, you mentioned something about providing your mother made your own bread. Was that kind of a common practice? People back then seemed to like raise
in her age group, yes, that was common practice.
Yeah, and that, of course, helped to get by then.
Oh, sure.
Right. Okay, what you mentioned your father was an electrician prior to the Depression. Things started tapering off.
Mm-hmm.
What did he do for...
He always found something to do.
So, but not necessarily related to the electrician?
That's right.
What sort of things? Odd job, that kind of stuff?
Well, he'd go out, pick up an odd job as an electrician here and there for a few days a week, or some other particular job. He always had something to do.
But he never... That's another thing I want to talk about. Like, for you... And for him, were there any lengthy slack periods?
No.
No.
Always had enough. You always, if you wanted it, you always had enough. You always had something to do.
Okay. What about, so then are you saying that you and your father were like the principal breadwinners of the family, or were there other people out hitting
the pavement? Well, as each child got old enough, they went through some kind of a job, whether it was selling papers to mow lawns or something.
Yeah, I see. Okay. Well, what about some of your experiences while working? I just kind of think that if there were, say, 10 people looking for every job available, there must have been a certain number of abuses, you know, that you had to suffer while you were on the job. You know, taking a lot of crap from employers that you wouldn't take today, for instance. Did you have any experiences in that sense? You know, being abused or being taken advantage of?
I never felt that I was abused.
Really?
No. Yeah, occasionally, yes, you'd object to some attitude of your employer. But that's happening today even more so.
Right.
With all the protection people have today, they're constantly calling abuses, which they don't have. But the occasional abuse, you just accepted it as part of living, that's all.
Part of the tough times of the day, right?
That was it.
So from like your observations and experiences, would you say that was extensive, employee?
No, I would say the average employer was a fair, decent man in those days. Now, I know there were some people who had actual gripes of exceptionally long hours and poor working conditions, and that's one of the good things that unions did to help eliminate in those days. But now you have the unions who are doing nothing but contributing to inflation.
Right.
Whereas in those days, they were correcting abuses
in
a trade or such as the poker suit industry, where they were supposedly abused. I don't know. I just read about it.
So, would you say then that these unions really did have a looking back then, I mean, forget about what they're like now. Looking back then, in your experiences in the 1930s, would you say that the unions were like as a savior, a really good
thing? They were very helpful in those days. I think they did a good work in those days.
It really helped out.
They were very necessary. Unions were very necessary.
Why?
Because they did organize a man, and they did get the power that a group needed to get the fair working conditions that many of them did not have up until the 20s or 30s.
Yeah. Okay. Say, for instance, like building trades, that kind of
thing. Well, building trades, factory workers, transportation workers, and so forth and so on.
Would you attribute then the rise of the unions during that period? I mean, that's a substantial growth period for trade unions in this mm-hmm. country's history. Would you attribute that to the fact that during the Depression that there were abuses that existed?
Oh, yes. There were, all the way going back to before the turn of the century, of probably abuses directed by the labor unions.
Okay. Right. So you'd see the unions back in the 30s and during the Depression as a good force.
Yeah, yes, they were a good force.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we talked about your family. Once again, about the money that was brought home by, well, you know, saying that your family was an average family, would you say that the money that you were bringing home more than amply provided for the rent and the food and the bills?
Sure,
it did. No, there were no really tough times. Okay. I've heard that some families during the Depression actually did lose their homes, though, the mortgage.
There were some that did, yes.
Did you observe any of that?
I saw one or two situations like that, yes.
One or two.
But they were people who just didn't think out their problem most of the time.
Yeah.
In other words, they would not go to the bank and say, "Dear, I can't pay the principal. Is it all right if I just pay the interest?" And the bank would have said yes. The bank didn't want that house on their hands. It was no good to them sitting there with that lot empty.
Right.
And the interest in those days on the average house would have been about the same amount of money as they would pay in rent.
Yeah.
See? So they just didn't think the thing out in most cases. There probably were a few sad cases that, but in most cases they could have worked something out. It's just that they didn't. They just gave up on something.
Okay. You said that it might have been because a lot of people didn't think things out.
Mm-hmm.
So, are you implying then that people who couldn't think things out were just not only in those
I didn't say couldn't think things out, wouldn't.
Yeah, okay, wouldn't think things out. Would you say that they were, because of that, say they just weren't adept to, you know, figuring out what was happening to them, mm-hmm. they were the ones that really suffered, the ones
yeah.
that you saw really suffered?
Yeah.
Okay. So you'd say that during the Depression, your family never really did have to go without the basics?
We never went out without the basics, no.
No.
Hard-working people never go without the basics.
Right.
No.
Okay. And you'd attribute that to the unity? What would you attribute that to?
Absolutely.
That
that's it. Everybody got together, that's all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hard times. It was, when the going got rough, you'd say the rough kind of got going.
That's right. They just took care of themselves. Everybody did.
Okay. Now, before I started taping the interview, I had mentioned I wanted to ask you about the psychological effects and how some people did commit suicide during that time. You mentioned about the stock market. Could you?
That's the only things I ever read about in the paper.
Yeah.
I never knew of anybody who, personally, who committed suicide because of the hard times. The only ones that you read about in those days were these people who had gone overboard into the stock market and couldn't take it when it broke wrong for them, that's all. But they were a very small minority. It shouldn't be built up to an indication of what the times were and what the reaction of the people was. It
right.
wasn't that way.
Yeah, because that's definitely escapism.
That's all. They just didn't have guts enough to look at the facts of life and do something about it. And they were very few and far between.
Yeah. Okay. Now, you were mentioning some figures to me, like, before we take the interview, like, what did people do then? You said something about the principal and the interest about stock.
Well, in those days, a person could, say, buy $1 million worth of stock if he had $100,000.
Yeah.
The rest was on margin. Now you can only buy 10% on margin. You have to put up 90% of the money. It's just the reverse.
Right.
Which is why those people got into trouble. They mortgaged themselves to the point where they could never get off.
Okay, Mr. Barrett, let's see. You were saying that you thought those people that escaped the hard times of the Depression by committing suicide were what? You said definitely a minority.
Oh, it's very small. Very small.
Very small. And you never had any experience with people? Nothing like that. Okay. Another thing I wanted to get into was how did the people who were doing, I mean, were getting by and were working hard back then and going out and bringing money home to help get by and buy the food. How did people like that were kind of weathering the storm, look towards the people who just kind of threw their hands up in the air, you know, the haves and the have-nots? If you could just say how your feelings were back then, maybe your family's.
Well, I didn't give it too much thought, except to say I was sorry to see somebody do it. I hate to see somebody take their own life for any reason.
Right.
I don't remember any reaction of my family or people generally about it, except here's the headline. Some guy who was a big shot one day is nothing today, and he just couldn't face that fact. However, I have noticed over the years that all the men and women of today in my age bracket who were in high school with me, as an example, and did as I did, work for what they got in school, work for the education they got, which is another problem today. Too many people are getting too much of a free education. They don't appreciate it. In those days, if you weren't capable of absorbing an education, you just didn't go to school, didn't go to an advanced school.
Right.
Which is the way it should be today. But everyone that I know ended up having a very successful life in every way, getting married, having families, having a comfortable life because they worked for it.
Right. So then, there wasn't any. What I'm trying to get at, I guess I should say, is that there wasn't any. You didn't feel any. You didn't kind of like despise people.
No,
who
no,
took the
no,
easy
no.
way out.
No, you didn't despise. You felt sorry for them.
Yeah. Okay. You said that one of the reasons you thought your family got by was because of this unity. You all kind of worked together. Did you say that that people, would you look back at those times and say that people kind of worked together? I mean, not just your family together. I mean, everyone who was in the same boat.
Sure they did. Absolutely.
In what sense?
Well, if a neighbor needed help in his house, my repairing something, my father went over and helped him. If it was the reverse, he came over and helped my father repair something. In other words, they got together and helped each other out.
And you saw a lot of that?
Oh, yes. That was the way it was in those days and prior to that time. People helped each other out. A neighbor always helped another neighbor out. You never disregarded a neighbor's distress. But that's the way they did it, basically speaking. As I say, if there was some repairs needed on next door neighbor's home, my father, being an electrician, would go over and help him out on it as a neighbor. No charge, no fee.
Right. Okay, well, that might be something that doesn't happen very often nowadays. I mean, it happened back then so often, as you said, and other people have said too. That, I mean, I wonder why. I mean, if you could kind of enlighten me as to, I mean, what was it like? Why this sense of camaraderie, you know?
People are too greedy nowadays.
That's the answer. You're right. She has the right answer. People today are greedy. They're only thinking of themselves. In those days, we thought of each other as neighbors.
In the Depression.
There were people in our neighborhood. We all had small homes worth, in those days, $6,000 or $7,000 or $8,000, which today would be $23,000, $25,000, $30,000 homes.
Right.
See what I'm saying? These homes today, outside of a little more modern convenience, a little bit of insulation, plumbing, electric wise, because improvements have been made in those things. But actually, our homes were just as comfortable in those days as your home at $25,000 or $30,000 today, right? However, as I said, these people that live next door, they were almost as close to you as your, as a cousin or an aunt or something like that. That's how you felt about them. They were your they were close to you. If they had an illness, we stepped in to help them out if necessary. If it was we had the same situation, but you didn't, they would have done the same thing for us.
Yeah.
And it was quite common in those days, too. We didn't have the occasion, thank God, for that. But I know of people who, when they were getting low on food, the neighbors found out about it, and there was a new, nice pie on the doorstep the next morning.
Yeah.
A pot of stew without anybody's name on it.
Right.
You see what I'm getting at?
Yeah.
And that's the way people thought about each other in those days.
Yeah, and that definitely would contribute to.
Whereas today, a neighbor says to the other neighbor, oh, get out and get some welfare.
Yeah.
See?
Right.
Well, I want to emphasize the fact that they didn't have welfare in those days. But if they had it, the average man would have been much too proud to get out and ask for it.
Yeah, that's not the case today.
No. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What about the? Let's see. Feelings of the people who were kind of really putting their noses to the grind in order to get by. How did they feel towards the people who were really get an easy time of it, you know, like say people who had a lot of wealth and weren't experiencing tough times?
We didn't envy them. As long as they made it honestly, we didn't envy them. Good luck to them. There were many wealthy families in our area of the country. We come from these places, the land of the lodge and cabbage and so forth and so on. We saw beautiful homes not too far from us, very wealthy people on the shore and down in Cape Cod. And actually, you would hope that maybe someday you could enjoy that kind of life if you worked hard enough. But as far as envying those people, no. Because I'd like to point out one thing, that those people, when you got to know something about them, were very kind, generous people. They were people who were very kind to their help.
Right.
Very kind to people who worked in their homes. They weren't these whiplashing people that they were depicted to be. They just weren't that way. They were very kind, decent people. Right. Now, they were fortunate over several generations of building up their wealth. But once again, I would say this, that my thought about it was that I hoped that maybe someday I could own a yacht and enjoy a yacht.
Right.
I didn't envy the fact that they had one and I didn't have it.
Right.
Because I had no right to envy, because I hadn't earned the right to own a yacht.
Right.
I had no right to it. They did. They had earned that right.
I see.
You know what I'm getting at?
Yeah. Yeah, that's okay. Well, why don't we move into another area here, and I just want to get your feelings, trying to gauge the political climate at that time as you observed it. What were your feelings or people's feelings in general towards the government during the Depression, the federal government especially?
Well, I had no particular feelings against the government at any time. I could talk to you as a Democrat would have against the Republican government in the 20s, or I could be a Republican and talk against the Roosevelt era in the in the 30s. But you might have disagreed with it and voted against the government it was in, but you had no animosity towards it. This was the government of the United States. And one thing we knew in those days, and you never heard in those days, and it sickens us today, people in our age bracket, listen to the college kids telling us how to live and what is wrong with the country. Basically, there's nothing wrong with this country. It's the greatest country in the history of the world. We knew it. Unfortunately, today, there's a lot of young people that don't know it.
Right.
And the reason they don't know it is that their eyes are closed, their ears are closed, and their mouth is open, so wide that they can't see or hear anything.
Right.
Okay. But in those days, we were taught that our government was the greatest government in the world, and we believed it, and I still believe it.
Okay.
We were taught not to ask anything of our government. We were taught, what do you do for your government?
Right.
What do you do as a citizen, not what does the government do for you?
Right.
What is it going to give you? We didn't ask anything from the government. And that's one of your problems today. Too many people
expect
too much from their government and demand too much. And then when it comes time for them to pay the bill, they're the biggest crybabies in the world.
Right. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So that was also like a sentiment that was experienced, that was held by the majority of
people.
Oh,
yes, absolutely.
Right.
There would be the differences of opinion.
Yeah.
Between the two major parties, neighbors, one would be a Republican, one would be a Democrat. But if they never built up any animosity towards each other or the government, this was a healthy form of government. That was it.
What about exceptions? You know, that you observed, you know, people that were degrading like the government or things like that.
The only ones that degraded the government in those days were the few commies we had around. A good,
yeah,
solid American never degraded his government. Never.
Right.
And we didn't have any Angela Davis or any of the other type that we have in the colleges today. Unfortunately, too high a percentage of teachers in colleges. A teacher of that type in a college in those days, he'd have been fired so fast that he'd forget he ever taught there,
yeah,
which is the way it should be.
Yeah. Okay, well, you're talking about college instructors. Now, you yourself went to college during these,
yeah,
times, right?
For 2 years.
What was the attitude of your professors then?
They were the kindest, most decent people you ever ran into. They worked with you not only as a student, but as a human being. They were your friends, your closest friends, were amongst your teachers. Whether it was in grammar school, high school, or college, they were dedicated people. They didn't belong to a union. They would have been shocked at the very suggestion that they should belong to a union and ask for less hours or ask for less classes to teach.
Or more pay.
And more pay.
Yeah.
They were dedicated people. And they were comparatively well paid. They weren't starving to death. A teacher has always been comparatively well paid in most of the United States. Now, there are areas where the local taxes are so low that I suppose that,
yeah,
the pay was quite low. But in the average area in the country, they were well paid.
This is during the Depression.
Sure. As I said, they were making $50 or $60 a week, and that was good pay.
Okay. So no real gripes then?
No, absolutely not.
And no dissatisfaction?
No. You never heard a gripe from a teacher, as far as I can remember.
Okay.
And as I said, they were your friends in school and out.
Right.
And if it took another hour or two to help a student who wasn't getting along too well, they voluntarily stayed night after night to help them out. They didn't ask for special teachers to come in and help them. They did it.
Right.
And they accomplished it successfully, too.
Okay, would you say that did you observe that there were many people who felt that the around you, that the government should come in and help?
No, I don't remember that.
No.
There were people who were happy when the government made laws which benefited the labor unions, protected them more, let us say,
right,
like the Wagner Law and so forth and so on. Whether it's overall good or bad is beside the point. It was advantageous to the unions and possibly a good thing at the time. So the majority of people are happy to see that, I think.
Right.
But insofar as asking for a new law about this or that every day in the week, we never thought of it.
Yeah, that's what I mean, because like nowadays people might have a tendency to expect the government to pass legislation.
Expect the government
out
to solve every problem they have as an individual, and the government can't do it.
And back then, during these tough times, during hard times, you say that you observed that people didn't have this feeling.
No.
Well, I'd just like to get your opinion. What would you attribute that to? That's an attitude. I mean, that's really a lot of strength of character.
That's exactly it. They had strength of character. They went out and did their job. They asked nothing from anybody. Just give me a chance to go to work and support my family. And that's all they asked for.
Yeah. And most of them did just that.
Absolutely. Whether he was a farmer or a tradesman or a storekeeper, it didn't make any difference. That's all he asked for. Just give me a chance to make a decent living.
Okay. I'd like to move into something else here. about the New Deal, FDR, and the New Deal legislation. How would you, how did you feel towards his campaign promises, and say your family, how did they feel? And
some of his suggestions and some of the laws enacted were, generally speaking, considered good. However, they were actually just ended up rather temporary stopgaps, really, for the Depression. As I say, the referred to the SEC earlier, the new banking laws were necessary. The Wagner Act, I think, was a necessary thing to help unions get the strength they needed. As far as the WPA is concerned, that was a joke.
Really?
The PWA PWA was beneficial, Public Works Administration, in other words, building roads and so forth and so on. That gave people actual good, solid work. They earned a good, solid living. The WPA was didn't mean that much. The trouble with the WPA was it did pass out money, but nothing was received back for that money. PWA, yes. A tunnel, a bridge, a road. But WPA was just passing out some money without getting anything back for it.
Right.
In other words, you'd have a crew of people working for your town that break up leaves in the gutter. They work for the park department, right?
Right.
So they put out the WPA men to do the same thing, but you already were paying men to do that. So this was just a giveaway, which they thought at the time was going to circulate some money around.
Yeah.
But they didn't do that much good, I
think. So were these like, was this like a general sentiment of people back then towards these programs? You mentioned that you were in favor of some of his, the Banking Act, the Wagner Act.
Yes, you had to get more control of the small number of people who, because of their control of financial institutions, could manipulate the economy in an unhealthy manner. So therefore, you did have to have certain laws, regulatory laws, to prevent that. In other words, the SEC was a good thing.
Right.
And it would be impossible under the SEC, I believe, to have the crash that you had in
1929. Yeah. Right. Okay. Well, then, you wouldn't say then that it was just a kind of like a total approval of FDR.
No.
And there were instances, could you give some specific instances of sentiment that you experienced?
Well, it was in those days, sentiment was mostly right down party lines. A Republican was 100% Republican, a Democrat used the 100% Democrat.
Yeah.
So therefore, it was pretty much solid down party lines, that's all it was, as far as feeling was concerned, one way or another.
And so, his New Deal legislation, like say for instance the CCC camps, you ever heard of those, Civilian Conservation Corps? What did you know, what did you observe of them?
Well, all I saw then was they were taking a certain number of boys in their teens or early 20s off the streets of a city.
Right.
Period.
And what, doing what, sending them out?
Sending them out into the country and to work in these camps, which might have had some benefit overall. I never did try to judge how much benefit it had.
Yeah.
But it, well, really what it did was get an 18-year-old off the street of a poor section of a city, something like that.
Right.
And how much benefit it did, I don't know.
Okay. So you yourself, you said you worked for the post office.
No.
The what was it again?
No, I worked in South Station when I first mentioned it.
Right. And then from there
I went. I went to Central America in 1937.
Okay, well, how did that, what was that all about? Was that
I went to work for the United Fruit Company.
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay, so then you left the country in 1937, and things were still pretty bad then.
Yes.
Okay. Let's see.
They were still pretty bad in 1941 when I came back, too.
Really?
Well, the only thing that stopped the Depression was the World War. Roosevelt didn't cure the Depression.
Yeah, that's what I want to talk about, your feelings about Roosevelt and Depression. Some people have said that his programs really helped and that
other people don't.
The
depression was just as bad in 1941 as it was in 1931.
I see. Could you say some more about that?
Well, we hit New York in 1941 after coming out of the country, and they were laying off people as fast as they ever did because the export-import business was bad, which was a big business in New York City, naturally. And there was an awful lot of people unemployed then. There's just as many as in previous years. While the percentage would have been fractional, hardly noticeable.
Yeah, I see. So you'd say his programs weren't all that effective? Then?
No. They were stopgap programs, most of them. So. And maybe psychologically they did some good. But materially speaking, no. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so strictly stopgap then.
That's
all. Okay. What about? You said that you didn't participate in the CCC camps
or
the WPA. What about any friends or relatives?
No.
Nothing back there.
No.
Did you say then that those work programs weren't that big of a deal back there in the East where you were living?
Well, you take a city like New York, Washington, Philadelphia, maybe
right.
They were. But I wasn't living in the city, so I don't know.
Yeah.
See, I wouldn't want to give you an opinion on that, except to know that that's mainly where the concentration was to take the boy out of the city.
Right, but what about where you were living?
No, I don't know if anybody went into the CCC.
Okay. And why was that? Jaws plentiful?
No, not plentiful, except once again, you always had a lawn to mow. You always had somebody's windows to wash. You always had snow to shovel in the wintertime.
Yeah, I see.
And they always had a job.
Yeah, so there all usually was something. For
people. Selling newspapers, anything.
Yeah. Okay. That's one thing I want to talk about. A lot of his programs did represent kind of a giveaway, you know.
They were.
Giving handouts. Was there a sentiment of resentment towards some of this legislation of FDR?
Minority-wise, I would say there was a big minority who objected very strenuously to it. In fact, Al Smith did, even though he was one of the leading Democrats. In 1936, he broke with the Democratic Party because he did not believe economically that Roosevelt was doing the right thing. And I think that if you analyze the situation there, you'd find out Al Smith was right. Al Smith was not an educated man. But Al Smith was probably one of the most intelligent men in the United States in those days. He also was, and had proved himself as governor of New York State, to be a very fine economist. He understood the economy of the country probably better than almost anybody else in the country.
Right.
But they wouldn't listen to him. They were hectic times, let's face it.
You were talking about the resentment, though, towards FDR and some of his giveaway.
Well, I eventually became resentful of what he was doing because I could see that all he was doing now, and Harry Hopkins put it very, at least he was honest about it, our program is tax and tax, spend and spend. And that's what's been happening ever since. They started all of what we have today. And what you're going to find out as you grow older and try to progress in life, you're going to find out that this theory of that tax and tax spend and spend is the worst thing that ever happened to the country.
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. So then you did observe, aside from your own little own area there in Massachusetts, your own little community, on a nationwide scale, you'd say?
Oh, yes. I was very interested in civics and the country, generally speaking. In my teens, early teens, you were taught that way.
Right.
You were taught how to read a newspaper and how to believe and what not to believe.
So in the newspapers and the magazines, people saying, disagreeing with what FDR was doing?
Magazines in those days weren't trying to control the thoughts of people as they did in recent years. That's one of the reasons so many magazines have gone out of business. They try to control people's thoughts.
Right.
Instead of just writing articles and writing people things, a magazine is made for enjoyment mainly. Now, they might have an editorial policy which you agree or disagree with, but in recent years, the magazines and your news media generally have been taken over by people who, to my way of thinking, are socialistic and fine. and who believe that their duty in life is to brainwash people into thinking their way.
And this didn't occur?
No. In those days, a newspaper or a magazine would editorialize, and then you made up your own mind.
Right.
But you see, it's like the New York Times said a few years ago, and I have no respect whatsoever for the New York Times, and lived in New York 24 years. Every article is an editorial. In other words, we're not reporting the news, we're slanting it towards the way we want the people to believe. This is what, in effect, what they were saying.
And this didn't occur?
No. Not in those days, no sir.
So no real, from what you saw, no real slashing out at FDR then? Just subtle criticism?
No, sir, that's right. There was criticism of it, but not slashing out, no. There was no, I wouldn't recall it that way.
And why would you say that? I mean, now, if we look at the times nowadays, we say that people would just be up in arms. If there's a group that's going to disagree, they're going to let their feelings be known. Why not back then?
People let their feelings be known at the ballot box. At the ballot box.
Right.
Right? The only reason he was elected in 1944, in my estimation, was because the war was on. He would never have been elected by the people then, except that the war was on and he put across this theme, don't change horses in midstream. So people did. I voted against him in 1944. I didn't care whether the war was on or not, because I thought that with Pearl Harbor and everything that he had done, it created a horrible injustice to the people of the United States. He foresaw Pearl Harbor.
Right.
And my reaction was, where was General Marshall on that fateful day that he never explained till the day he died? Why was he away from his desk when they already knew and had sent a telegram to Pearl Harbor that the Japanese were going to attack, as it came out later,
right,
23 hours before, and then Marshall takes off and he can't be found anywhere.
Right, so then the reason you say you were dissatisfied with FDR then was because of his handling of the war and not because of the New Deal?
Well, there's some things in the New Deal I've become quite dissatisfied with. You see, one of the things you're going to find out, as I did, I was an Al Smith liberal, let me put it that way, which made me a few years later a conservative, or a moderate conservative, which I have been till this day. I've worked for everything I got from the day I started. I've never cost my parents a penny from the day I was 12 years of age. And that's the way it was in those days. And so therefore I've been self-sufficient all those years. And I could see what was happening in the latter 40s.
Because you were saying how you became dissatisfied with FDR, but a little bit about it was because of his programs during the New Deal programs.
Yes, it was quite obvious in the 40s after the Depression was over, which was cured by the war only, that many of his programs had been political boom novels, that's all they were.
Right. No real good of great effect.
No, it's just something you couldn't see in advance because you weren't made that way. I mean, you weren't geared, you weren't educated to that point where you would analyze those things. But after your hindsight proved that he was very wrong, and also that he was, in many cases, deliberately wrong in the people. That's why you had the reaction in 1948 where Dewey almost won the election, because they were
right,
sick and tired of that type of program, the majority of people.
Okay, well, we're getting ready to close here now. We've been talking for a long time, and I just wanted to kind of ask you to reflect back over the years of the Depression. Reflecting back, how would you rate it in the intensity of the suffering of the hard times? Like, say, you mentioned the times starting to get bad around 1926, 1925, and the crash of the market, 29, in the early 30s and the late 30s. You said things were just as bad in 37 as they were in 30. How would you rate these years, this time span, as far as the intensity of the suffering? When would you say the country, from what you experienced, was at its worst? I mean, the times were the toughest.
In that period?
Yeah.
Well, I don't think there was any... You did have a slight increase in the economy in one or two years there, in the 36 or 37. But it fell right off again. Otherwise, I think the whole period was pretty uniform insofar as the amount of money available, the amount of unemployment. I forget the unemployment figures.
Pretty high.
Yeah. But I think you'll find that over the years, say, a 10-year period, 31 to 41, or even in a 42. A lot of people don't realize that there was still great unemployment in 42 after the war started.
Right.
Your unemployment figures were pretty constant, except for one period in there, and I can't just remember the years right now, when there was an increase in employment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you wouldn't rate like any 3 or 4 years in a row as the tougher than any
I can't, as I remember it, no, but my memory may be faulty on that.
Okay. So when would you say things started getting better?
1942, wholly due to the war. And then 1943, you had a labor shortage and the women had to go out to work, which was the worst thing that ever happened in this country.
Yeah.
They never went back into the home, and therefore your family life was just broken up.
This is what, 1943?
Yeah, that's when they started going into the factory to replace the men, into the war plants, you see. But after the war was over, a few of them went back into the home, became husbands, wives and mothers again, which they should have done. But a lot of them didn't, and that's when you started with the juvenile delinquency, because there was nobody at home to control the family.
Okay. So when would you say then that the country had finally snapped out of it, in your judgment?
Economically, a lot of part of 1943.
Okay.
But you've got to remember this, that you had a very serious recession, almost a depression just as bad, approaching in the Truman administration.
Right.
Just a few short years after the war. And the only thing that prevented that was the Korean War.
Okay.
In other words, since 1941 in this country, you've had a wartime economy, period. Otherwise, you'd have had more than one depression like you've had in the 30s.
Right.
That might surprise you a little bit to hear that, but
yeah,
you've had a wartime economy since 1941.
Yeah.
It has never slowed down. You saw just recently when Nixon was trying his best to get this Vietnam situation straightened out, get the boys home. The first thing, the problem came up when you saw it in the papers, you heard discussions about it, where are these guys going to get jobs? In other words, here is another several hundred thousand people coming into the workforce while the manufacture of goods for Vietnam will decline, and therefore you're going to have unemployment there, and now you're adding the boys that are coming home. See? In other words, the minute the war stops, and any war stops, you have a recession.
All right. Okay. Well, once again, looking back, do you remember ever witnessing any bitterness towards the country experienced by people around you? Anyone
no.
Feelings of bitterness?
No. We were proud of our country.
Yeah.
We were proud of our country. We wouldn't tolerate the things that we hear today. We wouldn't stand for that for 5 minutes.
So would you say then that, how would you rate would you say that depression had any effect at all on your faith?
No,
country?
Absolutely not. Only the one of faith in my country, the faith in God.
Okay. And so it absolutely didn't shake it at all?
No, no, absolutely not.
Were you always sure, would you say that you were always sure that it would snap back, the country would snap
you
back?
Always knew that better days were coming. Sure you did. You didn't lose faith in anything. The only thing is, you just kept pounding that.
So this was a feeling experience.
For instance, to get that job in Costa Rica, I was just walking up Federal Street in Boston one day, and I went by the United Fruit office. I had a job. I didn't think that I was getting ahead in it. I was a good employer, nothing against the employer, but there was just no room for me further ahead right then. And I felt that I was at an age where I had to start moving, 24 years of age,
right.
25, whatever I was. So I just popped into this office, took a test. And a week or so later, was heading out of New York City on a ship to Costa Rica. Now, there could have been 100 guys go by that day that were without a job, but they never would think of going into that building. Now, I don't know what took me into the building. It's just that all of a sudden, when they found, I just went in and went up to the employment office.
Yeah, okay. So, and you really sincerely believe that it was a temporary thing with these tough times?
Yeah, it was the same way in 41 when they came back. The reason that we came back, because of the war approaching and our commitments, the government took over all our refrigerated ships. We had the biggest fleet of refrigerated ships in the world. Many of them were sunk during the war. So therefore we had to close down operations. In other words, we couldn't grow any bananas anymore because we had no ships to put them in. See?
Right.
cocoa, coffee, all of the things that those countries down there depend on economically, as their backbone, economically, I should say. I came back to New York, 41, and went to New York, and within a week's time, I had a job. And there were people who had been out on the streets there and lived, born, and brought up there. I was a complete stranger. I didn't know one street from another.
So you say then that, good part of the reason that some people got by and others didn't, or was it just because of your own personal makeup?
Absolutely. It's what did you want, and how badly did you want it?
Right. Some people just threw that
in. And how hard are you willing to work for it? That's all.
Okay. Do you ever remember anyone ever considering leaving the country in disgust or anything like that?
No. God, no. Nobody would dream of leaving this country.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you've got to remember another thing, too, that my generation was much closer to the immigrants that came into this country. My grandmother came from Ireland.
Right.
My wife's father came from Ireland.
Right.
My grandfather came from Ireland. My father was the firstborn in our family here. My mother's side, hers family came from Ireland a generation or two previous to my father's side. But we were told by our grandmothers, you live in the greatest country in the world. Whether they came from Ireland or Italy or Germany or Poland, it didn't make any difference. They came here for a reason, because it was the greatest country in the world. They saved up for years their pennies in those countries till they got a few dollars for steerage.
Right.
Now, do you think for 1 minute with my grandmother telling me that and knowing what they went through in the old countries.
So and how do you want this girl to train today?
Yes, Weston, yes.
Where?
Okay.
But you didn't, you knew what other people had left to come to this country, and even the person who had just landed here was far better off the day they landed than they ever had been before. So with that type of education, not in school, only you'd get it in school, but you're getting it at home too.
Right.
You realize, you appreciated how great this country was and how much it meant to people.
So most everyone believed in the potential of the country.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we'll close with this final question here, Mr. Barrett. And I want to ask you, looking back, would you see any beneficial effects of something like the Depression occurring again? And if so, why?
I just made this statement a day or two ago. I'd hate to see it come, but probably the greatest education that a lot of people in this country could receive is through a depression. They would then start realizing the true values of life and the value of what they had and appreciate what they had and now what they're losing, and then they'll start to go to work again to get it back, and the country will be a lot better off. On the other hand, I dread a depression. So I try to talk about it both sides of my mouth.
Okay, so that'd be a great lesson then to be learned.
It would be the greatest lesson economically these last two or three generations could have. Not my generation, because we have good memories pretty well of what
right.
we went through, right?
Right?
But a person who was, say, born in the 30s and was too young to appreciate what was going on and has never had the hardships of a depression. And even in other words, what I'm saying is anybody that, let's say, is 35 years of age or younger would gain a great education from a depression.
Yeah. In the sense that it would...
It would teach them some true values that they don't have, that they've never had inculcated, never instilled in them.
Right.
See, that's what I'm getting at. When you've had to, people lived on farms and didn't have electricity, didn't have an inside toilet.
Right.
Now, just take this generation day back and put them back there for a year or so, and then see how happy they'll be to get back what they left for a year. See what I'm getting at?
So there might be some good lessons there.
Yes, you never hear a complaint from anybody who was brought up on the hard work of a farm from morning till night and without all the modern day facilities. Those are the people never complain, because they realize how much they have. It's the person who was born into this opulence that we've had in the last 35 years, close to 40 years now, right?
Yeah.
Right? that don't realize how much they've got. And another thing they don't realize is what the previous generations contributed towards what they have.
Right.
Yeah. See what I'm getting at?
Yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
You take my father's generation, they're responsible for the automobile. They're responsible for Edison,
right,
the electric light. They were the ones that started all this mechanization of this country. They laid the groundwork for all these beautiful things that we have today. But how many people did you ever hear sitting around to that generation say thank you?
Right.
They accept it just as though this is something they have a right to have, that they don't have to work.
So the Depression would instill a new appreciation then.
I think so. And yet I'd hate to see it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think on that note, we'll close this interview, Mr. Barrett. And I'd like to say in the end here that I appreciate your thoughts, and this has been a real enlightening experience for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming in.